Welcome to the Cycling Matters Podcast, your weekly dose of discussions about our love for bike. This podcast is brought to you in cooperation with Ciclo. Hello, I'm Karen.
And I'm King.
I'm Brian.
If you're new here, we're super happy to have you listening to our podcast. So just to let you know, we release episodes every Monday. So to make sure you don't miss out on that, subscribe to the Cycling Matters Podcast on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. And if you listened to our previous episode, welcome back and thanks so much for sticking around. So this episode is part one of our ODAC special, and we're happy to be joined by Carmela Pearson of ODAC PH. We'll ask her about ODAC, beginning with what ODAC is to begin with, her experiences as a cyclist and an event organizer, and what to expect from ODAC PH this 2020 season.
Yeah, so we have a lot of questions, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For you, but let's just get started.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe you could give us a little background about yourself first before we go into more specific ODAC questions.
Okay. So I'm a cyclist. I'm a proud Filipino cyclist. I still race, but at the same time, I do a lot of cycling adventures on the side. And if you ask me right now, I love cycling adventures over racing. I'm a mom. I have a job. I used to be in finance. And now in the Philippines, I'm not based here. I'm actually based in Singapore. But I'm here almost every month because of the rides I organize for ODAC Philippines.
I see. So what we wanted to do was talk about maybe the ODAC first and then switch over to more personal.
Yes.
So let's start with what is ODAC? Because I think some of our listeners might want to know.
I know. ODAC, first time narinig ko siya parang, what? ODAC? How do you even spell it? I mean, it's so weird, the word. So what is ODAC?
So ODAC is it's actually a French cycling event. ODAC, it's actually from the word audacious, which is very positive.
Wow. Yeah.
And then it's a cycling sport in which participants attempt to cycle long distances, and the minimum is actually a 200-kilometer ride. But these rides are supposed to be finished in a predetermined time. So in the Philippines, since 2010, I've been organizing rides that are 200 kilometers, 300, 400, and 600 kilometers in terms of distance.
I think what a lot of listeners would start to ask would be, why would you want to ride?
Yeah, why?
Because apparently 200 is the minimum distance
for
ODAC.
Yes, that's right.
So why would anyone want to ride 200 kilometers?
Yeah. And do you have ano yung data or what's the average duration? From based on experience.
So ODAC, it's a French cycling event. We actually report to the mother company in France, and they're based in Paris. They're called ODAC Club Parisien. So they define the rules for these rides, and it's been around since 1891. So a 200-kilometer distance ride, you have to finish in 13 and a half hours. A 300-kilometer ride, you have to finish in 20 hours. 400, 27 hours, and then 600 kilometers, 40 hours. And for the first time in the Philippines, we're launching the 1,200-kilometer ride, which you have to finish in 90 hours.
So, paano yung tulugan yan?
Yeah.
How does one sleep?
So, it's all about strategy. So, the ODAC is not a race. So, I have to emphasize on that. Mm-hmm. Because it's supposed to be an endurance challenge. And In the course of my organizing it since 2010, the wiser and the more patient the cyclist, the more successful they are in these events. So it doesn't follow that you're strong and fast, that racing mentality won't cut it in the ODAC. So it's a nice venue for other demands of the body and the mind. So for me, it's more fulfilling. And it challenges you on a different level.
You know what? But it feels weird because every time we join ODAC, I would always see a Carmela, shouting ODAC is not a race.
Yes, yes.
It's so different. ODAC is not a race.
Yeah. There's a lot of emphasis in race.
Yeah. I know. So parang back to the question din kanina, parang imagine riding, for example, if you want to finish 200, imagine riding 13.5 hours. Like, yeah. Man.
I have to say, though, medyo feeling ero tayo about joining the Audax, but we've only ever done 200.
Yeah. And, oh, that's fine.
At this point, we can't imagine.
I haven't even done. I haven't even done a century
ride. We all
ride.
Start from somewhere. Yeah. That's, yes. A lot of people ask me, Carmel, how can you comprehend? How can you, put that's it right, in your yeah. mind to finish that kind of distance? But for me, it helps to compartmentalize. You don't view the entire distance as 200, 300, 400. You always look at it, or I'll try to cycle to the next 50 and let's see how I feel. And then you still feel good. Then you try to cycle to the next 50. And you'd be surprised on how much the body can adapt to that kind of mental and physical challenge.
Although I can imagine compartmentalizing can also go wrong. Because 400 for me is like, so I'm going to ride 200.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to ride it again. And that kind of just blows my mind.
Yeah, the idea. I get what
because
you mean.
After 200, we just want to eat.
Yeah, and sleep.
And sleep.
And like just rest, yeah, wake up the next day.
So apparently you can do 400, 600, and even 1200. And that's something that humans...
That's super intense. And like and also like when you were saying about compartmentalize, parang hindi lang siya simple as 50-50, 50-50. For example, 200. Kasi parang yung last 50, parang it feels like 100, for example. Like it's so, it's like mental battle talaga.
The last quarter feels like half of the ride.
Exactly. Like, yeah, because, I mean, yeah. Like, oh my God.
So some of the basic terms we read on the website, like a randonneur. What is a randonneur?
How do you pronounce it?
Randonneur.
Yeah, how does one become that?
And so it's just what it's just the term for people who do Audax. So everybody who joins the Audax rides are randonneurs. And this means that, you're there for the fun ride, for the challenge. You don't necessarily have to be fast. And you'd be surprised that the age range for randonneurs, I had a participant last Saturday who was as young as 12 years old. And,
oh, wow.
And he did 300 kilometers.
What?
Okay. Yeah.
And then
so now we're motivated.
And then my oldest participant last Saturday, he was 67. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's really inspiring. And actually, the older you are, the more patient and the better you get into long distance cycling.
Wow.
What about brevet?
Brevet.
Yeah.
Brevet.
Yes. Brevet.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's the ride that you do. It's like so it's the course. So you ride a brevet.
Okay.
So that's
all right, right. Oh, I have a question pala. Like, do you have to finish 200 para maging randonneur?
To be a like, randonneur, you can just, as long as you ride the rides, do the rides, you're a randonneur. You register, you're a randonneur. The fact that you wanted to be part of Audax Philippines, you're a randonneur. Huh. That's it. You don't have to like finish first and then, okay, I can call you a randonneur. It's not like that.
Okay.
But then how do you become a super?
Oh, but that one. There you go. So a super randonneur, that's actually the term coined by the people in Paris. And it's actually adapted globally. Where you finish a 200, a 300, a 400, and a 600 kilometer ride within one Audax season. So what's confusing at first is that an Audax season is actually different from a calendar year. Mm-hmm. Diba? So for, let's say, for the Audax season of 2020, it starts on November 1, 2019 and ends on October 31, 2020. Okay. So if you finish all those four rides within that particular season, you're considered a 2020 super randonneur.
So the 1200 is not necessary to become...
No, okay. Of course not.
All right.
But it's necessary to be a super randonneur.
Yes, you need to be a super randonneur to ride the 1200.
I see. Okay, so yeah, okay. That kind of makes sense.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about you before we go back to talking about the Audax. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been riding? What got you into cycling?
Okay, so... Interestingly, I got into cycling really late. I was already 26, 27. I was a young Makati yuppie back then. I was working in IT. So, and then it felt like I needed some outlet because back then I was working for a big multinational company and it felt like I was working 12, 14 hours a day. And I said, life can't be just about work and going home and then that's it, right? So I started exploring. I met a lot of people. My first bike was actually a mountain bike. And my first activity was that I got involved with the Firefly Brigade. I don't know if you're familiar with the Tour of the Fireflies. That's right. And I was a volunteer marshal. I was doing like Clean Air Act. I was marshalling for these rides. And I really enjoyed it and the people around it. And then after that, okay, I said, I want to do something different. So I started doing triathlons. And then after triathlons, I focused more on cycling because I felt like it's so difficult to train for three disciplines and excel in them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I was working and I was, you know, I needed to be practical. So I said, okay, let me try cycling. So I focused on cycling. And then eventually, I met friends who were doing ODAX rides in Singapore. Mm. And I was flying to Singapore a lot for work. So whenever I fly to Singapore, I always bring my bike. In fact, I started with ODAX Singapore back in 2009. So wala pang ODAX Philippines noon. And then every time there's an ODAX there, I would go there and bring my bike and do the ODAX rides. And it felt more like an adventure instead of a race. And I like the format because you can go as low as you want, as fast as you want. So I had total control of everything. Unlike racing, that you really have to keep up with the people or the peloton to win.
Right.
So I fell in love with the format of ODAX. And then the guys in Singapore, the French guy who organizes it there, said, why do you keep coming here and, you know, riding our rides? Why don't you just bring it to the Philippines? And I said, but how can I bring it to the Philippines? No, I mean, nobody will ride 200, 300. Back then, it was unheard of, right. You know. So I started pitching the idea to a lot of people back then in 2010. And they said, you'll be a broken athlete if you do these rides. Because I was still racing competitively at that time. You'll ruin your training. It's not healthy for you. Mm-hmm. So I was getting really negative feedback. And I was training in Mall of Asia back then. You know, the competitive cyclists are there. Some of the national team members are there. Yeah. And if you pitch that kind of idea, they would like smash it right away, right? And then one of my title sponsors back then was David Salon, Inc. Mm. So David Charlton, when I told him, you know what, I think I want to take a step backward from racing. And I'll focus on ODAX riding because I really like long distances. And then I thought he'd say, don't do it, you know, I'm not going to sponsor you anymore. Because back then, we were an all-women's racing team. And then, like, I was really surprised when he said, you know what, if you can get the license to bring it to the Philippines, I'll support you 100%.
Wow. That's really
cool. Yeah.
I love David. Like, yeah. I just love him. Respect talaga.
Are we plugging David Salon episode?
Hi, David, if you're listening. Recycling matters.
No, but on a more serious note, I was really impressed by that. And then, so we started in 2010. And I said, you'll have no marketing mileage if you start supporting my ODAX because nobody believes in my rides. Nobody would like to support these kinds of rides. And he said, you know what? ODAX is so big in the UK because it's really more personal than you know, commercial. And then he said, I'll support you if you want to do it. So there were even rides back then that there will only be like 7 of us.
Oh, wow.
And the same format that you see now where he provides all the marshals and the support vehicles, he did that exact same thing, even if there were like 7 of us. And I said, wow. So that really motivated me to organize these rides because I said, wow, the people, he cares about what I think. Mm-hmm. And so that was the start, how we started ODAX. And it was actually a 300-kilometer ride.
Oh, the first one.
The first ever in the Philippines. And 22 people joined. I think 70-80% are women.
Oh, wow.
We did it quietly and 100% finished.
And where was it set?
Subic. Same exact route that we still have now. That's how we did the 300 back then. Nothing has really changed.
Amazing.
I wanted to ask, do you still ride these?
These ODAX rides? Yes. I still love these rides. In fact, I did Paris-Brest-Paris last year. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, so that was like my third PBP. And I didn't finish because my riding partner had an injury. And I had to make a judgment call. Do I leave him behind or do I push on? Mm. Diba? So these rides, actually, when you think about it, I said, this is not just about the cycling. It's about the relationships you build with the people around you. I think that's what made ODAX really special because you see a lot of these riders, especially here in the Philippines, where somebody will just go there not knowing anybody. And then after the ride, he'll be, you know, friends with a lot of people afterwards. And I think that's for me, that's the main takeaway from these rides, and aside from just finishing the distance within the cutoff time. So last two, I'm still doing, again, to answer your question, I'm still doing these rides. I'm still organizing these rides. And I think I'll still be doing ODAX rides until I'm old and gray. Because in Paris, there's still like 81-year-old finishers.
Mm-hmm.
So there really is no excuse.
So you mentioned you started with a mountain bike.
Yes.
You've done triathlons.
Yes, I've done triathlons.
Would you say that, because you mentioned also liking adventure rides these days.
Yes.
Is that how you identify yourself?
Yes. A lot of people, last year, just to give a little bit of background, last year I raced for at least 15 days because I belong to this racing team in Singapore. And the requirement is to at least do 15 days of racing. And out of those 15, so I was racing around Indonesia, Thailand, Japan, Singapore. And then I podiumed 10 out of those 15 days.
What kind of races are these?
These are all road racing.
Criteriums, road racing,
ITT, the team time trial, and the individual time trial. So, for the team time trial, we won the national championships in Singapore, me and my racing team. So on a competitive level, it's there. I have a racing team. And then on an adventure, the adventure part of cycling, that's where I really, really love the format, because you really have to go through a lot of physical challenges that's not defined by racing rules.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, aside from Paris Best Paris, I think my highlight ride was I cycled in Tibet all the way to Everest Base Camp in July.
Wow. That's a dream.
How much preparation goes into something like that?
So, of course, there's a lot of climbing involved. Mm-hmm. But mostly, it's really more on altitude training. So I was there like 9 days before summiting to the Everest Base Camp because you need to acclimatize. I think the highest elevation I reached was like 5,280 meters above sea level. So your body reacts, even if you're like the strongest athlete in the world, but if you haven't acclimatized to that kind of elevation, I mean, the Philippines alone, there's like, our highest is 2,000.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Thereabouts, right? So the preparation for that is that you really have to acclimatize. I went there like more than a week ahead of time, and then, you know, you just do training rides, cycle up, and then sleep below. So.
Okay, so I'm kind of geeked out about this, and maybe for our listeners, what kind of bike do you bring up to?
I know I was.
So in the Tibet side, it's all paved.
Okay.
So you can actually cycle all the way to Everest Base Camp using a road bike, and they said I was the first Filipino to actually do it because they record everything. And Tibet,
nice.
Yeah, Tibet is quite strict. You know, Tibet is Tibet. You know, there's like a lot of political unrest between China and Tibet.
That's right.
And we were going through monasteries. And it's nice. The people in Tibet, because they're like close to the Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was really more spiritual than physical. And that's part of the cycling adventure part that I really, really like.
Actually, China will be very upset because we're not using the Tibet Autonomous Region.
Yeah.
So was this unsupported?
No, so this is supported. There's no. You have to go through an accredited guide because Tibet. They only allow very specific groups of of tour operators. So when we went there, it was like just me and my group. There's nobody else.
Okay.
On the road. It's one of the most remote roads in the entire world, and probably the highly sealed roads, that's what they call it, highly sealed.
What
roads.
Kind of cars do you encounter on such a
normal naman. I mean, it's you can see a lot of cars that Japanese, you know, normal cars. Yeah, nothing.
And then like this ride, so is it a whole day or like multi-day?
This is a multi-day ride. I think we cycled 9 days before attempting to go to Everest Base Camp.
Okay, but the attempt itself, parang is it?
No, it's just one go. So so you go through. We cycled from. We flew in from Chengdu, China, and then we landed in Lindsay, which is around 2,900 meters above sea level already. So we started at that altitude.
Does it feel different?
Very different. In fact, all the places that we stayed at, all the hotels, I've never seen anything like it. Like the beds, we had oxygen tanks beside us.
Oh, wow.
Just in case.
Intense
talaga. So I was like, oh, this is something new, something different. I've never been in a country where all the hotel rooms have actually oxygen tanks beside it. So it's quite an experience. And that's a part of the adventure, part of cycling.
Were there bad moments during this adventure in Tibet? Like,
so I came there thinking that I think I know what I'm doing. You know that kind of yabang na I have endurance.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, I have endurance. I have all the, you know, but and I've had altitude training before. I mean, I've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania back in 2010. So I know how it feels to be in altitude. Because that was like close to 6,000 meters of climbing. But this is different. You're cycling mm-hmm. and you're in altitude. So I didn't know how my body will react to that kind of. And interestingly, I was really weak. It really saps your energy when you're at that altitude. And it's quite humbling, quite humbling. And for me, I think those kinds of experiences here, I mean, in Asia, when I race, I podium, but you know, but when you're there, you're like nothing. It keeps you grounded, right, and keeps your perspective really open, saying that, you know, this is different and this is nice.
If you could humor the tech geeks as well, how many bikes do you currently keep, or do you have favorite ones at least?
Ah, okay. I have a bike sponsor.
You have a bike sponsor, so
am I allowed to mention? Well,
yeah,
I
mean, yeah, sure.
No problem.
Okay, so. So I've been sponsored by Specialized Philippines. Mm-hmm. I just met up with them earlier before going here. And I'm going on my fourth year with them.
Oh, wow.
Oh. 4 years pala.
Yeah, but I'm quite known in the industry to keep loyalties with my sponsors because I believe that, you know, they believed in me when I was nobody. And they believed in the rides that I do, even if my rides are not that famous. Mm. So for me, I stay close to brands who keep the same vision, who share the same vision for cycling in terms of, you know, long distance. And
so we probably shouldn't ask, what is your favorite non-Specialized? Okay, we wanted to ask a few questions about, as a woman, cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still think that being a woman has particular issues that come along with it? Because we talk about it bike commuting, women matters when you bike commute, but we've never had someone come over from the race side, the enthusiast side, the adventure side. Are there still issues that have to do with?
When I started cycling, there were just very few women cyclists. I mean, even for road racing, cycling, even triathlon. In fact, the first Ironman 70.3 in the Philippines, that was in Camsur, I remember there were only 22 women who joined that. So sabi ko, oh, so now it's really getting better. I mean, especially for triathlon, which is great. Road cycling, we're getting there, especially when we get a few gold medals from the Southeast Asian
right.
Games.
Mm-hmm.
So that really helps. That really helps. But it's still a predominantly male-dominated sport. I mean,
right. Is it getting better, though, you think?
It is getting better. I think social media helps. Social media helps. If you noticed, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, you'd see a lot of these posts in social media where, you know, they post photos of girls in cycling kits that are pa-sexy.
Oh, yes.
I am so against that. You know, yeah. I am, you know, I said, you try so hard to be taken seriously as a woman cyclist, and especially Filipina cyclist. And then you see these guys posting in, you know, these social media groups and pages. And I'm like, it's not helping. It's not helping. But so that was like 3-4 years ago. What I've noticed for the past 2 years is that a lot of men actually, when somebody posts something like that, a lot of the other men would tell them, take that down.
Yeah.
You know, so that really helps. Because before, 3-4 years ago, if somebody posts like that, I couldn't take it. I'll comment.
Yeah.
I said, when you post something like that, think of your mom, think of your sisters, think of your friends who are women who want to get into the sport but couldn't because of people like you. So I started being like that. Parang on a feminist point of view, it's really bad. But you know, that's for me. I'm a female cyclist. I work. I was a professional. You know, I try to uplift the image of Filipino women cyclists, and then you do that. Mm-hmm. So for me, so in the past 2 years, that has improved a lot, and it's because the men were also defending the women.
Right. Di ba remember, Brian? Before, parang I was ranting na, hey, merong kami member sa RBP na lagi nagpapacute ng posts. So she's a girl. Tapos mga pacute cycling posts, ganun. So, sa Road Bike Pilipinas, lagi siya nagpapost. Mm-hmm. And then like, minsan natitrigger ako na naka-MTB naman siya. But kasi sa Road Bike Pilipinas nagpapost, mga ganun. But like, that was years ago. Like, now right. Parang di na masyado. And like, kung may mas serious na yung posts, yeah. And like mas wholesome.
Yeah, I think we're inching forward, but at least steadily along.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, toxic masculinity really still is pervasive in cycling, local cycling at least. But yeah, I think moving along towards not so toxic.
Yeah, I think it's helpful that more men are veering away from that because, I mean, as a woman, of course, like we really want the equality and to be taken seriously, but it's difficult if men are not going to budge. So it's really good that that other men are also in it with us and also defending us, which I think is a really good thing. But then of course there's still a lot of toxic masculinity, especially because I don't know, I think a lot of like people in power enable toxic masculinity, but I do hope it gets better, and I think it is.
And yung mga nagpa-participate sa events like before, so may lady friends and again to join. Mm-hmm. Like before, Sabina, it's so easy to get podium finish
locally.
Like,
because
you just have to finish the race. That's right. But now, parang mas competitive na. Yeah. And then like, so that's good.
Okay, maybe we can circle back to Audax.
Yes.
Why would you want to organize rather than ride? Because I can imagine I'll always want to ride.
Yeah, so when I started Audax, I have to admit that it was more for selfish reasons why I started it, because I simply wanted to qualify for Paris-Brest Paris in 2011. So I said, okay, I'll bring it to the Philippines. I'll ride all these rides so that I can qualify for PBP. But so I realized in the next few years, the number of participants have been growing. And this is something that I never anticipated. In fact, we don't have a marketing team. We don't have marketing efforts. We only have the website, the Facebook page, and the Facebook group. And I never boosted any post in Audax, I mean, on a regular basis, unless it's related to safety. That sometimes we boost that, but that's like once in a year. But we never really want... The objective is not to have more participants, but more quality participants who will truly understand what the ride is all about. And to answer your question, I'm not, I still want to ride these rides, but because the number has grown significantly, we needed to focus on providing the ride properly. So, but doesn't mean that I can't still ride. So I still ride the Audax in Singapore, where I don't have to organize and think a lot about other people. But I still love these rides.
Is there a bit of you that kind of, when you see the group riding away in the morning?
Very envious. Especially when they finish and then you see them all laughing and hugging each other, crying. I mean, sabi ko nga before, if you want to feel good about cycling, stay at the finish after a 600-kilometer ride. Everybody is just welcoming you. Even if they don't know you, they hug you. Some men cry. And for me, I've never seen anything like it in any cycling event. And I thought I've seen everything. You know, so I've been around, I've been traveling, I've seen a lot of cycling events. And yet, this is where you get really emotionally involved.
I can imagine though, 600.
Yes. Grabe yun. Like, I mean, 200 pa lang, I'm just having a hard time comprehending. Yeah, as someone who hasn't.
There's also the challenge while you're riding where you can get very emotional in the middle of a ride.
That's true.
Am I doing this to myself?
But it's part of it. You go up. You go through a cycle. There are like, you're sometimes, you feel so good, but then you go through some low moments.
So, we also wanted to ask about the worst, maybe moments, but not so much really. But yeah. are there particular moments organizing an Audax that you feel were the lowest point?
For me, I always tell people, Carmela, when you say a successful Audax weekend, what's that? What's a successful? What's your KPI? What's your key performance index? Mm-hmm. And I always tell them, one, there are no accidents. Mm-hmm. And two, you just have a very general feeling of happiness at the finish. So those are just my two big metrics. And whenever there's an accident, there are times that we really cannot sleep. And my staff, I love my staff. The people I have right now are the same exact group of people I had since 2010. Because I needed some people that I can trust, who can think. You know, the marshals that actually do the stamping at the checkpoints, they know if there's an accident, they know what to do. They're very empowered to do to look for hospitals. They know mm-hmm. all these things. That's why I said, hindi lang nagsa-stamp ng card yung mga nasa mm-hmm. control point. These are people that you can rely on when emergencies happen. And we've had so many for the past 10 years. And I was counting, I was doing an update. I just did an Audax 101 session in Palawan 2 days ago. And I had to update. Ooh, I've organized 95 Audax wow. rides in the Philippines since 2010. And we've done it quietly.
That's right.
And for me, a lot of the success goes, the credit goes to the people that I really work with. And they've been the exact same people since 2010.
So loyalty is a recurring theme with you.
Loyalty. Yeah. Loyalty.
What about commitment?
What about best moments? Like, as an organizer, maybe?
For me, best moments are when after the ride, and people share their experience in social media.
You can
like look at their accounts. You know, I don't mind reading long stories in social media how they went through these, you know, cycles. And I like reading about people who don't leave each other. You know, teamwork at mm-hmm. its best. We don't leave anybody behind. You know, in a group like that.
Right.
So they ride the pace of the slowest ride. For me, you know, that trumps the entire experience. You know, that really parang wow. That lifts the Audax in its core. Parang ganyan.
I have a side question.
Yes.
Surprise control points.
Yes.
Do those actually happen?
Okay. So it depends on the route. So, I mean, unfortunately, there are still people who cheat. Right? And then we've had a lot of people reporting, oh, he rode the van and yet he, you know. So secret control points are actually one of the preventive mm-hmm. measures that we put. And we always do this in routes that are easily, you know, that people can easily cheat on. So, yes, we do have them.
Okay, moving to the future of Audax, mm-hmm. Maybe. Maybe you can first tell us about Mindoro 1200.
Oh my God, it's so hyped up. I mean, like, you know, may teaser pa before and like
hyped Whoa. Up, but I'm not joining that.
Ako, like, I just got super excited. Pero like, hindi ko rin ma-imagine sarili ko doing that.
So maybe you could tell us about it and can we expect it to be a regular thing for Audax Philippines?
Okay, so most countries, when they do a 1200 kilometer ride, they do it every 4 years. So for the Philippines, we haven't really decided if we want this to be an annual thing or do we want this every 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. So it really depends on how this first one will go. And we'll assess, of course, afterwards if we'll do it, you know, as often as we can. But the Philippines 1200, I think it's about time that we do one for the country. This is our 10th year. So, and a lot of Filipinos have already had that experience of doing a 1200 kilometer ride. I think a lot of our randonneurs have matured and this would also parang put the Philippines in the map of long distance cycling in the world, because a lot of people outside the country are actually very curious. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to hold this, you know? So yun. So we'll see, we'll assess.
We're just wondering kung pwede pa kaming umasa, because this year we can't. But maybe in four years.
Yeah. Enough time to train.
Maybe a last question. And it's a two-part question, sort of like, how do you scout new places can we expect more places to pop up for all that?
So before, for me, like the Subic route, the 2, 3, 4, and 6, I personally wanted to see, I actually go on exploration mode, and then I look at it, ganyan. So, but in the course of the past 10 years, I owe a lot of these new routes to, one, magugulat kayo, the folding bike community. Oh. You know, the folding bike community, they're actually the ones who told me about the route in Rizal. You know, Carmela, going to Infanta, going to Jariel's Peak, you know, back then, on a folding bike. And you see this is something that I never expected when I started out ODAX, organizing the ODAX. You know, folding bikers started doing the ODAX rides 5 years ago, and they would finish. And for me, that's quite an accomplishment, because you realize that these guys actually have that sense of adventure that I never had, you know? So I owe it to them for discovering new routes, because they're not the fast ones talaga who race, but they're more exploratory, parang ganyan. And then as we gain more good name in the industry, in the country, a lot of people from different provinces would actually email me, "Ma'am, you know, we have these really nice roads." In fact, the one in Palawan that I went to a few years ago, 2 days ago, they've been emailing me since 3 years ago pa.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah. So now we've branched out to Davao, to Gensan, to Rizal, to Baler. And these are locally driven. These are, they email me, they show me photos, they send me Strava files, and I become curious. And, you know, if time permits, I would do this full time. But, you know, I owe these routes to a lot of people, especially if they want to say, you know, we've got cycling clubs here, we'd like to help, we'd like to volunteer. So it helps to have that kind of community. And I think it's worth mentioning, for the past 3 years, there are cycling clubs like the Centurion Cycling Club and the True Living Cyclist who have been volunteering to marshal, because they know that I don't have a lot of manpower. I have very limited, there's nobody in the ODAX that works full time. I mean, just like you guys. Yeah, exactly. So this is, we do on top of our normal workload, family load. So it helps to have these cycling clubs volunteer sincerely, that, you know, will help you. Let's do this route. Let's do this ride. So the rides I organize, this is not just from me. You know, this is from local cyclists.
So it sounds like we're gonna see a lot more places.
Yes, yeah. Definitely for 2020. Okay. This year, we're doing Palawan for the first time. We're doing Bohol.
Wow.
Wow. Leyte, Dumaguete.
Wow.
And Siargao.
Amazing.
Oh my God. It's Siargao Island. Is it like buong island?
Yeah, because the island of Siargao, it's really small and you can cycle the whole day. I mean, And what I noticed for the past, especially for the past 6 years, is that the ODAX has helped in terms of ecotourism. Sabi nga nila, "Carmela, you're building something different, like cyclotourism." You know, you bring people to different places, and you teach them that, you know, there's new routes here. And like Baler last year, I thought we'll only have like 100 participants. Then we doubled that. We were surprised with the number of people who showed up. So there's really that niche market ng ODAX.
Actually, as someone from Zambales, I wanted to say, kahit walang event, you now see people just riding their road bikes or mountain bikes, and they're just traversing the province. And
before the ODAX in Zambales, nobody knew about these Kabangan.
That's
nobody
right.
knew about Masinloc.
Yeah.
And now it's like, if people know about this, oh, Masinloc, yun yung turnaround sa 200.
That's a route.
and when we started in 2010, there were nothing. There's no economic activity in those places. And now you can see all these stops na meron ng mga karinderya, may mga nagbebenta na. And if we can bring that kind of, parang you give back to the local community, I mean, that's for me, that's really something that I never thought that we'd achieve. So hopefully we'll bring more of that in the other provinces.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, and on that note, I think we can end on a high note. And Carmela, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
And we hope you can come again when there are more places that we can talk about.
I know.
Actually, we have so many more questions.
I know.
I think that's actually enough for another episode.
Yes.
So yeah. So
you know what? But can I just say, like, personally, thank you for organizing ODAX. Like, for me, it's like my cycling culminating activity, like, every year. So, parang,
thank you.
Actually,
thank
many you so of us much. From our club, Team Loyola, we look forward to the end
thank
of the year.
Thank you so much.
But
thank
after you. That, we say we're done for the year. And
ito na yung last.
So, thank you.
So, thank you again.
And by the way, you can check out their Facebook page, ODAX Randonneurs Philippines, if you want to see more events, and they also have a website, ODAX.ph. So thank you so much again, Carmela, for taking the time to talk about ODAX. Even though I'm not sure if I'll do this year. Well, no, I don't know.
Well,
I don't
it's the start
know.
Of the year. So, yeah. Yeah.
Let's see if I'll join this year, but I haven't done a 100 yet. Let's see. So guys, subscribe to the Cycling Matters podcast on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. Our episodes are the next best thing to riding your bike on a Monday. Just search Cycling Matters on your favorite podcast platform while you're stuck in traffic. You can catch more of Cycling Matters on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, or on our website at cyclingmatters.ph. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Cycling Matters Podcast. Until then, ride safe, Philippines. Yay!